Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 218. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Senior Security News Writer Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob.
How are you doing on this fine Tuesday?
We've had weeks and weeks of busyness, mm-hmm. big cyber attacks, events, sure. mm-hmm. what we're talking about today, and it's nice to not have all that much going on right now.
Yeah, it's been a quiet week, although this has already happened, but I expect ransomware attacks are going to be ramping up as more classes are in session, more schools start up. So yeah, it's back to school time. Yes, we've had a bit of a reprieve. It's been a slow week, thankfully, but we are here today to talk about a story that you wrote, that you spent quite a bit of time on, and we've been meaning to discuss this topic for a while, mm-hmm. not in advance of your story, following the publication of your story. The title of this story is Vendors Criticize Microsoft for Repeated Security Failings, and that headline really says it all. Because you spent several months talking with different folks about a litany of complaints and issues, three sort of broad overall issues, but different incidents, different examples of those, I guess, three broad areas of complaints over several months. And it paints a very tough picture for Microsoft. There are a lot of folks that were apparently, that had been fed up with the way the company was operating. And finally, I guess it had reached a boiling point for a lot of these guys at some point this year. And maybe the tipping point was the Storm 0558 attacks, the way Microsoft sort of disclosed those attacks, the way they framed them, the way they discussed them, which we're going to get into. Regardless, it hit a boiling point. There was not just a lot of criticism that was told to you. There was criticism that was published in vendor blogs, on Twitter, social media, etc., etc. A lot of folks. So I guess let's start, if you want, mm-hmm. at the beginning. When did you first start to hear about some of these complaints, at least in terms of this article that you worked on? And when did you get a sense that, oh, there's something here? There's a lot of folks that have a lot of issues.
This reminded me a lot of one that I worked on and you helped me on a couple of years ago, where I went into some of the issues with Apple's bug bounty program, mm-hmm. Apple Security Bounty, where you kind of hear something and then you're like, oh, that's a little weird. Why did that person just tell me that? Mm-hmm. And then you ask someone else and then you go, oh, there actually is a little bit of something here. And then you ask someone else, and then you start to build this narrative, and those are the most exciting stories to work on. And it's the kind of thing where those stories really have to come to you. You don't really find them. And like, you know, when you were in like sort of my position, sort of more on like the daily writing side, or at least speaking for me, I find like one to two of those per year that are mm-hmm. one of those, like those super exciting, oh, wow, I am surprised that people are talking about this, and this issue is bigger than I thought, and very exciting stuff. So Microsoft is a giant company, operates on a scale basically incomparable in the software space particularly, but also they're up there on the hardware side as well. Mm-hmm. And we've heard criticisms of Microsoft security before. We've heard praise of Microsoft security before. And because they're such a big company, you kind of like, you hear it, but you also ignore it to some extent because they're a big company. They'll do something's wrong. They'll do something's right. Right. Like every other major vendor. But we were at RSA earlier this year, and I was in the CrowdStrike appointment. CrowdStrike is of course one of the larger competitors with Microsoft on the security side. And I was talking to Raj Rajamani, who is a C-suite there. And I was just asking him about the software liability stuff from Biden's national cybersecurity plan released, I think, in like March, where they were talking, where the White House was sort of talking about how the people who get affected most by insecure software are the customers, and yet vendors don't really face any kind of consequence for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking him about it, and he was pretty bullish on it. And he also sort of called attention to Microsoft by name as someone who has a particularly problematic history with vulnerabilities. And I sort of took a mental note of that because I was like, why is he telling me this on the record? Is he expecting me to write about this? I don't know. So I didn't do anything with it for a while. I sort of told you about it, and then I'm just like, it's a Microsoft competitor. I'm not going to take it too seriously at the moment, but very interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I just sort of sat on it for a few months. And then the Storm 558 stuff happened, where a Chinese affiliated actor, who Microsoft dubbed Storm 558, used a Microsoft secure account signing key to forge the tokens and impersonate Azure Active Directory users. This led to a series of compromises against 25 organizations, I believe. Yep, 25, including U.S. government agencies. And there were a few interesting pieces to that. One was that CISA, the U.S. cyber agency, was the first to formally report it because it was a federal civilian executive branch, unnamed, that was impacted by this. And the only reason why that branch found out was that they had logging available to the two highest tier, most expensive Microsoft 365 license agreement levels. There's E5, which is enterprise, the highest enterprise level, and there's G5, which is specific to government. Mm-hmm. And then the CISA advisory noted that CISA and the FBI are not aware of other audit logs or events that would have detected the activity. So that was a little, as the kids would say, sus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then so people were criticizing them for the paywalling aspect of it, which Microsoft eventually backtracked, and next month in September they're planning to roll out additional logging available to all existing Microsoft 365 organizational tiers,
right? Free of charge,
which you know what, you make a mistake, you correct it, that in itself is fine, right? People were also criticizing the scope. People were also criticizing that in Microsoft's advisories about this, it sounded a lot like they were describing pretty serious cloud zero-day vulnerabilities, but they never used the phrase zero-day or vulnerability. And those are just words, but they didn't frame it in a way where it was clear that that's what was going on or something like it was going on.
Yes.
And which is the problem. I guess zero day and vulnerability, fine. You don't want to use those words, fine, but there was criticism of the transparency, I guess, in how these attacks came to be.
And how they were framed and maybe downplayed a little. Yeah. Yes.
That was definitely a suggestion about it. And then sort of connected to that was Microsoft still hasn't disclosed how the signing key was obtained. They basically said an update. They had an update on like July 15th or 16th where they said they were still investigating. And right. It's fine if it might be fine if they still haven't found it, but it's just been like a void of information since that point. And right. it's been a month and a half since then. So because of all this stuff happening with Storm 558, there was a new, really intense wave of criticism against Microsoft. So I looked back at that quote from CrowdStrike and I'm like, maybe I should ask other people who aren't necessarily Microsoft competitors, people who may have worked for Microsoft before, people who've been in the industry a long time and could sort of give me a good top-down view of how I should be putting everything into context. And that's how this article came out, was here. Was I talked to maybe 10, 12, maybe 15, but some of them weren't necessarily quoted in the story.
Yes.
Some folks from vendors, some folks from competitors, some folks who are partners to Microsoft, people who aren't affiliated with Microsoft in any way. I got like a pretty good smattering of sources across the board, some executives, some non-executives, some people in research roles. And this is sort of painting a picture of the issues with Microsoft's security organization. And I guess where I would sort of segment this is there were three or four key issues. One is transparency, which we talked about, and Tenable CEO Amit Yoren had a couple very brutal, I would say, LinkedIn blog posts where he was talking about research Tenable had done into Azure vulnerabilities and how Microsoft was downplaying it, silently patching it, all these things. There were also a lot of complaints of patch bypasses, or there were complaints of patch bypasses I had heard. And then the most public example of this that comes to mind, but there's a bunch, is Proxy Not Shell, the Exchange flaw from maybe 2 years ago. And then yes. Dustin Childs of Trend Micro's Zero Day initiative, he told me that his researchers managed to bypass it on like three different occasions, meaning they bypassed it, Microsoft patched it again, they bypassed it, Microsoft fixed it again, they bypassed it again, was sort of the way he told it to me. And then just communication practices, saying that they're difficult to work with, that their security organization has declined over the years and moved towards a product marketing focused communication tone rather than one of Microsoft being the guardian of the security ecosystem, which they still very much are, given how pervasive, prolific, whatever word you prefer, their products are in the technology ecosystem. Like, they are one of the key guardians of security. But some of the folks I talked to theorized that maybe as Microsoft has gotten more into the product security game in the last 4 or 5 years, that has had an impact, and that also the closure of the Trustworthy Computing Group in 2014, which was Microsoft's dedicated half engineering, half communications,
right,
security group to sort of work with the larger security community and make sure things are trustworthy and secure and above board. And that was sort of the broad picture, is a general decline of Microsoft security initiatives and organization and practices over say the last decade.
Yeah.
And that I would say is kind of the top down.
And that's sort of the mystery. And we've talked about this, you and I and others here offline, about, well, why are we hearing these things? You know, why are we getting so many complaints? Why are so many vendors, security researchers, security professionals, experts, whatever, some that compete with Microsoft a little bit, maybe on endpoint security, and some that don't. Why are we hearing so much about this? What is going on within Microsoft that has led to this? And Yeah, the trustworthy computing part of it and just sort of the structural changes, and that really clicked into place for me because, I remember I've been doing this for a while, and I remember I can recall the Windows XP launch, for crying out loud. But I remember the trustworthy computing, initiative, the memo, when things were going on at Microsoft, when the company finally said, we've got to do a better job in these areas. And I remember other incidents, not incidents, but I guess stages, periods throughout the company's history where they have maybe stumbled a little bit and they've gotten criticized over security issues and they've had to respond. I don't know what is going on lately, because it does seem like there's a number of things that have taken hold here for them. I guess this is maybe a tough question to answer for you, but what do you feel like people were most like of those issues, those three kind of broad areas? Was there one that I guess the people you spoke with were most upset about?
I think transparency, if I had to rank them, which transparency is kind of the broadest, so I can sort of fit the most under that. But Amit Yoren of Tenable, he seemed particularly frustrated with Microsoft and Tenable's research of those Azure issues, and he had a whole timeline, and he was calling what's the word? Is well, one of his blogs was titled "Microsoft: The Truth Is Worse Than You Think," and then he had a tweet that said Microsoft is missing a moral compass when it comes to cyber practices and putting their customers at
It's
risk.
pr pretty direct, pretty direct.
Yeah, and Dustin Childs, who used to work for Microsoft for I think 5 6 years, and I was talking to him, and one of the things he was talking about was transparency doesn't just mean disclosing a vulnerability. He also described how for Microsoft Patch Tuesday each month, Microsoft would be upfront and say, here's what you need to act on, here's what you don't need to act on, here's where a patch might not be enough. And then that Microsoft would have these good descriptions of things to that if you're an organization that uses Microsoft, or even if you're, let's say, a security company that wants to relay this to your own users, customers, whatever, Microsoft would be good at that. But that is since stopped. Dustin theorized that was due to a potential onboarding of automation for some of these issues, that Patch Tuesday, 100 vulnerabilities might drop, and you have to comb through each one individually in order to figure a lot of things out by yourself. But one of the things that I found very interesting was the tone was different from what I expected from my interviews. I expected. Well, I had two possible expectations. One was that the PR would just shut down every conversation I had. And
Of course.
to their credit, pretty much none of them did. Pretty much. But the other thing I sort of expected was that it would be like nasty a little bit, or it would be more outright mean than it would. And I don't hope for these things. I want a balanced story that tells a complete story. But I expected more explicit party lining than I necessarily got. And the tone, I would say, of the conversations I had weren't people who want Microsoft to fail, but more people who are disappointed in Microsoft because they understand how important Microsoft's role to the community is, and that they need to succeed. If they don't succeed, it's hard for anyone else to as well.
So I want to touch on that point because, like you, I think it was the software liability, when that measure was first introduced in the cybersecurity strategy overhaul, and it started getting a lot of discussion in different corners of the tech industry, the InfoSec industry, obviously. I started to hear from people, hey, this is fine, but we can take shots at like these smaller vendors that have poor patching or like that silently patch or whatever, but like what about Microsoft? And why aren't they doing better? And I kind of gave that some thought. And again, I've been doing this for a while covering tech. And I know that there have been stages when Microsoft has gotten, roasted pretty hard over, just the number of vulnerabilities that they may have, the types of vulnerabilities that they've had in their products. They've done a really good job over the last however many years, 10 plus years, of being better about, disclosing vulnerabilities and addressing them. But one of the things that you start to see with the different types of vulnerabilities that are coming out, all these different variants on different products, and as you said, the patch bypasses, and oh, we patched this vulnerability, but it really was just sort of like, it was like a surface patch. It didn't really address the underlying flaw. It didn't address the underlying architectural issue that creates, it's just sort of a quick fix. And the proxy, the exchange issues, I mean, that really, I think, it opened up my eyes to this problem. But I feel like it probably did the same for other people as well, just because, listen, and this is no disrespect to Orange Tsai, the researcher that initially found a lot of the proxy vulnerabilities. But if a guy working for, not a somewhat small InfoSec consultancy, I believe the company's based in Taiwan, if he can spend a few months and find like subsequent vulnerabilities and issues and just really take the time to dive into that attack surface and that program. And I know it's not a price. We're talking about lots of code and a very complex product. I get it. But if he can sit there and study it and pore over it and find all these different variants, you kind of like have to sit there and say to yourself, well, why didn't Microsoft's own product security team do the same? I mean, he said in, I believe, in that initial blog post about the first set of proxy, was it proxy logon?
I believe that was the initial one.
That, hey, I've been looking at this. I think this is a pretty broad attack surface. I think there's more here. It's like you got the sense early on with this that there was more coming. They can't sit there and say they didn't know. They can't sit there and say they were unsure, like, oh, we thought we fixed it all, and there was no reason to believe that there would be more vulnerabilities. That is absurd. And I'm not saying they did say that, but if you were to ask the question, why didn't you, hey, Microsoft, your product security team, your security infrastructure, all the people that you have, why didn't you get more proactive? Following the wave of those first vulnerabilities. And I don't think that they have a good answer for it. And I think a hypothesized answer like the one I just put forward, that's, I'm sorry, that doesn't work. Not with the amount of funding, the amount of resources, and the amount of people that you have at Microsoft. And I just wonder, part of me is like, going back to the point about, hey, we need Microsoft to succeed. The thing that really concerns me about this is like, okay, the transparency stuff, okay, maybe there's something culturally or organizationally going on with Microsoft where they're circling the wagons, they're much more sort of risk averse and they just don't want to, they're image conscious and they want to play things straight. And, you know, whoops, MSA key, not sure how it happened. And, you know, there's an argument inside the organization that says, hey, we better not write anything in our threat reports on this MSA key and Storm 558 about how much damage someone could do with an MSA key that's been liberated from, who knows, internally at Microsoft or more likely probably a customer environment. But let's not go into that. So then a company like Wiz comes in and has to do it for them. Like that's bad. But that can be, I feel like that can be corrected. You know, someone at the top says, okay, no more of this. We got to be more upfront. We've got to provide more detailed information, a more honest, clear-eyed assessment of the threats and the threat picture for our customers. So I feel like that can be changed. What worries me, Alex, is if they're dealing with this many vulnerabilities and you've got this many 0 days and you're not doing a better job patching, you're not doing a better job addressing root causes, I guess like part of me wonders, maybe they are making good, honest, like good faith efforts to do that. And they're just, maybe it's just too much, not too much, like it can't be done, but maybe it's a lot harder than we think. And even a company like Microsoft is starting to fall down on this because of the sheer number of products, the sheer amount of code that you have to deal with and the complexity of enterprise software. That's kind of what, like, not to give Microsoft an out, but that's what's starting to scare me with this. So like, again, the transparency issues, you feel like, I feel like at least that could be corrected if you want, if you really had an executive team that really wanted to buckle down and like get this right and address it and say, you know what? I mean, you know, Tenable, you guys are right. Let's be better about this. But maybe they are trying to be, maybe they're trying to do a good job, be better with vulnerabilities and addressing root causes. And it's just, for whatever reason, it's a much steeper hill to climb than maybe we realize on the outside. And they're just struggling with it, which doesn't portend to good things for the technology or the security industry. Because if you can't rely on Microsoft to do it, I don't know.
I go back and forth on how much faith to put into this, because on the one hand, I try my very best to write a complete story that tells all sides of the story, and sure. And while there are some harsh comments of frustration that were shared with me that are reflected in this story, I'm kind of rooting for everyone to do a good job and be great, right? I want everyone to succeed. I want everyone to do a good job and do right by people and be transparent. So there's that part of me that goes, oh, well, Microsoft did address Amit's blog post. They did give me a comment where they said they were always improving and maybe they have been getting better behind the scenes, but it's too early. On the other hand, I look back to Amit's newer blog from August 2nd, where the Microsoft Security Response Center published a blog post in response addressing Joran's comments. It said an initial fix on June 7th fixed the flaw for a majority of customers, and that work was completed to fully address the flaw on August 2nd, the day Joran's blog was published. And there was also a tone of, security's really hard, guys, and we're just doing our best, which is probably true. I'm sure there are a ton of people within Microsoft doing thankless work to do really awesome security stuff for sure, but it is, if I can reuse the word sus, a little bit sus that the work was completed on the day that Amit published this devastating LinkedIn blog.
I can't say that didn't cross my mind as well.
And it could be that that was true.
Yep.
But it could also be that they're covering their butt.
Yeah.
Right. And that's sort of the rub of it, where I go back and forth. And Katie Mazuris, who helped establish Microsoft's initial bug bounty platforms and may have even led those initiatives, she was telling me that what happened to Microsoft is going to happen to every large security organization when it gets old enough and large enough, where the people who established it and had these really good faith initiatives in place, maybe they retire, maybe they go somewhere else, maybe the company goes in another direction, like, let's say, a more product focused direction, like Microsoft seems to have done. And while there are plenty of good intentions in place, other desires, other corporate needs may take hold, and maybe there can be some narrative dissonance along the way. And she thinks that the decline that we're seeing at Microsoft might not be a Microsoft problem and could happen to any number of giant security organizations over the next decade or two as they get to be sprawling monsters, not in a derogatory way.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah. Her comment about, you know, the rising and falling like the Roman Empire is that really struck me. So
I
don't know what's next for Microsoft. I know that they've taken a lot of criticism of late, and I'm trying to remember a time when a company got this much sort of vocal, on the record, really harsh criticism. Like, just, you know, again, been doing this a while, and I know that there have been periods where people were coming out and saying, you know, Oracle doesn't care about security, they've got this many vulnerabilities every month, and, you know, they don't, their development team doesn't do X, Y, or Z or whatever. Adobe, same way. But, you know, the litany of complaints and issues against Microsoft and the way that they were told to you and the way that they were aired publicly really, really struck me. And I can't remember an occasion where something came to head like this against a company the size and scope of Microsoft. So I don't know what's next for them. I encourage everyone to read Alex's story. Your story is excellent. It's quite a read.
Thank you very much.
Got a ton of really eye-popping quotes in there. But I guess I'm with you. I mean, I hope that they kind of see this and understand that this isn't just like people that may be competing with them on, like, you know, anti-malware or endpoint threat detection. Like, these are, you know, major companies in the InfoSec space that have deep, deep, grave concerns over what's going on over there. And this isn't just sort of, you know, your usual complaining from, you know, a security researcher who feels like they're being brushed off or whatever. This is different. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll see. I know we say that often, pretty much at the end of every episode of this podcast, but I'm not optimistic. Let's just put it that way.
In the short term, I'm not either. In the long term, I have no idea.
Yeah, maybe there'll be a trustworthy computing redo, part two.
Redux, yeah.
Where they come out and just say, you know, we're going to do all these things and we're going to do them better. I hope. I mean, I take the comments and criticism of Microsoft from the folks we've talked to, and I've talked to a number as well. I mean, we've compared notes, and you know, I take them as legitimate complaints and not just you know, competitive sour grapes or whatever, or frustrations you know, on the competition side. So We shall see. But Alex, you did an excellent job with this story. And again, encourage everybody to read it. And I thank you for hopping on the pod to discuss. It felt good to discuss this.
Yeah.
After working on this for so long, you know, waiting to drop all this information. It's a long story, but it's, like I said, it's excellent. It was good to finally get it out in the open and discuss it. So.
Thank you. Thank you. The original version of this was like 5,000 words. And the thing I'll say is the writing process is always like you go insane and there are parts of you that hate the process, but nothing feels better than having written something you're really happy with.
Yeah. Yeah. There's your inside baseball from some very tired, beleaguered.
Sure.
InfoSec reporters, sure. Yeah, and it's only summer. Well, again, thank you, Alex. Appreciate it.
No problem.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of the Risk and Repeat podcast and Tech Target Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.